and we're going to ask Scott Tipps to come and make a few comments. He was not privy to what I would ask him to talk about. He probably wants to talk about the law since he literally is a lawyer. You have attorneys and you have lawyers. Scott Tipps tries to be a lawyer in a world of attorneys, and I want to tell you it's incredible, but he hangs in there pretty well. But I would like him to comment on, number one, the security and the safety and the help that he can give. If you are or know of financial parties who wish to get offshore coverage and security, I always would argue with Tipps or anyone who tries to tell you to put anything offshore, because there comes a time when you start trying to get it back onshore and you won't make it. But if you are sophisticated enough to be interested in those things like trusts, etc., you just heard about new limited liability companies and corporations and things. Well, Tipps is going to literally move to the Isle of Man of Ireland, and he would be able to help you with, and he would be able to help you with any of those kinds of business procedures. He also is the personal attorney for the Health Federation and Maureen Solomon, and I really do believe that that would be a connection that you ones do need to make. So if Scott would talk to you a little bit, I would really appreciate it.
I would be happy to. Thank you. First of all, this is totally impromptu. I didn't know that I was going to be asked to do this, so if I don't quite am not totally prepared, that's the reason why.
Come on, he's an attorney.
Oh. Look, his lips are moving. He can't be telling the truth. He's an attorney. So I was at a meeting the other day when someone was introduced to a friend of mine, and he was asked what he did, and the guy said nothing. So the other guy said, "Oh, a politician." And so attorneys are a lot like that, you know. It'd be good if they did nothing. More often they do too much and the wrong way. I've been practicing for about 14 years. I went to the University of California, Berkeley Law School, and worked my way through undergraduate school and law school, put myself through, and then worked for one of the big law firms after I got out and saw what a rat race it was, and that lasted 3 years, so I decided to go my own way and have been on my own pretty much ever since, with the slight interruption of a partnership that really showed me what lawyers were like, and made a divorce look, very nice by comparison. But in any event, just over the last, to get more to what Dharma's talking about, over the last year or so, maybe a year and a half, I've been looking and talking to many different people about doing offshore accounts. And the reason was really twofold. One, I thought it was, as funny as it sounds, or may sound, is my patriotic duty to do this, because I could see the troubles coming. I hope I'm wrong, but I could see these coming. And I thought, well, you know, one of the big dangers here are asset seizures and forfeitures. Now, unfortunately, I missed a lot of the part that went on here, and I apologize for that, or I could have perhaps addressed some of the points that were made by Dharma. But the I had an emergency come up, so that's my excuse. But anyway, I looked and looked for some time, and I was interested in this because I thought the best way to protect people from the asset forfeitures that could happen here is if you had your assets at least relatively outside the clutches of the people who would grab them. I thought, what better place than to have them offshore? There are other ways to do it, of course, domestically, by sheltering it in Nevada corporations, which in my opinion are about the best corporations to be in domestically. So anyone who's doing that, if it's done correctly, I would heartily recommend. For those of you who might be a little even more adventurous or want to couple something like that with an offshore thing, it does lend itself to some real advantages to be offshore as well. One, you're outside the U.S. tax jurisdiction, and what I was looking for was a legal way to do this, not illegal, but legal way to do it, where you accomplish two goals. One, you protect your assets from crazy people out there who might take you into court and want to sue your rear end off to get something, and the other are just to extort something from you. And the other reason was legal tax avoidance, by structuring an arrangement in such a way that you could legally reduce your tax load. And I've been privy to a lot of the sovereignty type lectures and seminars and the like, people who are involved there. But I saw it as a duty to do this in a way because people would be more free to politically active here in the United States if they don't have to worry about the people who don't like your politics then tapping the IRS or the state attorney general or the local district attorney to then investigate you and prosecute you and seize your boat, car, or whatever, and put the pressure on you that way to desist, have you cease engaging in these political things. So the more Americans that can locate their assets in a way in which they'd be safe, the more apt they are to be able to be politically active. I know since I just sold my house, I feel much freer than I ever did before, and I've been a house owner for many years, and my wife and I feel very free by comparison to how we felt before. We don't have that large, immobile asset sitting there getting ready to be lopped off by someone who is in the business of doing just that. You know the saying, those who live by the sword die by the sword. So I was waiting for the sword to eventually hit me, and fortunately we got rid of at least that exposure. So I was looking into a number of things. Cut to the chase real quickly. After about a year to a year and a half search, I finally happened upon some people I feel I can really trust and aren't well, I use these legal terms, bullshit, but that's the problem. And
I like that one.
I learned it in law school because they taught it to you. And in any event, I was interested primarily in the Channel Islands, Guernsey, and Jersey. I'd ruled out the Caribbean islands because they're so tainted with drug money, overtones, and all of that. I figured I didn't want to get any of my clients into that. Albeit they could be completely legitimate operations. It's just the taint. You know, you talk about the Grand Cayman or the Cayman Islands, and the first thing that usually comes to most people's mind is, well, there's a drug operation, you know, Colombian drug money's being run through there and the like. And whether it is or it isn't, that's not what I'm into. So what I want to do is something safe with a tradition that has some more stability. And I really happened upon, even though there are numerous areas, I happened upon two particular, I guess you call it three jurisdictions. One is the Channel Islands, which is really two jurisdictions. That's Guernsey, has the improbable name of the Bailiwick of Guernsey. You know, those of you who saw the movie The Mouse That Roared, you know, you remember the Grand Duchy and Bailiwick of whatever, Ruritania. Well, this is the Bailiwick of Guernsey, and then there's the Bailiwick of Jersey, and they're actually two separate jurisdictions. And then there's the Isle of Man, which is also a separate jurisdiction, and they have all had their independence for some time period. The Channel Islands, and they're collectively known as the Islands. The Channel Islands since about the 1200s, when they very cleverly played the French off against the English, and the English king, in order to keep his sovereignty over the islands, granted Jersey and Guernsey total domestic independence. So they write their own laws and the like, and so they become very well known as tax havens since then, and especially since the war after the German occupation. They were briefly occupied during the Second World War, and after the war was over and after they were liberated in May 1945, which was long after, by the way, D-Day, they were isolated and left to starve for themselves. They were very upset with the British government, and they even cut the purse strings with the British government because they said, you didn't even bother to defend us. Our relationship with you is one in which you're supposed to be responsible for our foreign affairs and our national defense. And what did you do? You abandoned us to the Germans during those 5 years and left us high and dry. So they even have more independence now than they did just before 1940. So they're responsible for their own currency. They have a flat tax rate of 20% if you live on the island, but you can have a tax-exempt corporation, and by doing this, you pay just a flat rate of about $700 a year. and you have a corporation that's offshore that's totally tax exempt, so long as you don't live there as a resident or remit money directly there and keep it there for purposes inside the island. If you're just keeping a bank account, that's another thing. The Isle of Man is an independent entity in the sense that, and I should add, just so you know, and I may be boring some of you because you may not care to know, but it's important to know the history because it helps give you a sense for the security of these islands. They're known as crown dependencies. They aren't part of the United Kingdom. They owe their allegiance to the crown, the English crown. But it's very nominal, as you can imagine. They're too busy being in the newspaper to really worry about these islands and, you know, having their little affairs and things like that. But the Isle of Man has its own parliament and is the oldest continuous parliament in the world. It's been operating for over 1,000 years. I think now it's 1,015 years. And
probably the same people.
Could be the same people. That's a good point. They were settled by Vikings, or the Vikings came in, I'm sorry, they were settled by Celts, and the Vikings came in, took over, and they established Parliament in 979. And it's been operating continuously since then. In any event, they make their own laws.
Connection made with court.
Okay.
And that corporation that he works for. And that's because as he has seminars, etc., this is one possibility that I would really, really like introduced into the bag of goodies that you ones can use. And you haven't had anyone before in any of those areas that, quite frankly, I would even consider suggesting that you hook up with. But Scott is reputable and he will care about you. And this is something that I want court to become more and more familiar with, because this offers a choice that is of great value to you. And these ones dealing with these products, if you will, because they're basically products, need to know and need to be able to offer this. There are a lot of people out there, and once you're not, you know, with these Nordic Vikings that are 10 feet tall and run around in etheric form, that annoys a lot of people. But when you're dealing with court and Scott, it puts it where it's supposed to be, on the business level of good business with integrity within the law, so you're not sweating all the time. And you're not listening to shysters and swindlers. And yes, indeed, you will pay for the service, but it's worth it. It's worth it. You're doing it right. And that's the way you're going to recover your world. Not through arguing and not through withdrawing, but participating and using these things. Go on, I'm sorry. I really want them to begin to be familiar with this.
Thank you. No, that's, I appreciate that. I will try to keep it short because I could talk forever on this subject, and it's obviously you aren't here, and there's some people nodding off from my talk anyway, so I'll pick up the pace. There are many different advantages. I went there to visit these people and do a due diligence on them, and there's one outfit in particular. They've been around for quite a while, although in separate forms, and then I just finished this last week some meetings, very extensive meetings with them when they came over here to California, and I've been very impressed with them and with their honesty. I even talked to one of the guy's former secretaries on the Isle of Man, whom I talked to at length about what she knew. She was no longer employed by them, and I got a rave review from them, or from her, about them. The people I feel very good about. They're like chartered accountants, and they set up the trust, and they will do the corporate entities and the like. And we are going over there to do essentially the same thing. We'll be working in a joint venture position with them. The other thing I liked about these people is they're very politically well connected on the island. There are only two judges on the Isle of Man. It's marginally cheaper to set up corporations on the Isle of Man. But the beauty of doing it there over the Channel Islands or elsewhere is that they don't have a tourist industry like Guernsey. They're very dependent on this, and they're very careful about not doing something that will bring disrepute onto the island, because they know it will scare away all their other business. The people I deal with, for instance, have as one of their clients the Russian tanker fleet. They deal with that, believe it or not. They have contacts with Swiss banks and others. They're very well connected, and they do this throughout the world, from Australia to Kazakhstan to the U.S., and with them I'm hoping to develop more of the U.S. business, because typically most Americans look just to the East Coast as a foreign country. I mean, it is to me. And then the West Coast is you know, the other limit. And so they don't think beyond that. But I think it behooves you to think beyond it, because it offers several advantages. One, although you don't have to do it through this mechanism, but they can keep an account in any currency you want. Or maybe you don't want it in currency, you want it in gold or silver. They can do that. They can show you where that can be done. They can get passports for you, legal passports. You want an extra passport legally? They can get it for you. Now, I want to advise you, you'll come across others who can do this, and some will be completely legitimate. But you need to be very careful, because I've come across some reports where they will get you, some of these other services will get you passports, say an Irish passport or a Belizean passport, but they won't have any of the documentation that backs it up. You'll get one that on the surface looks completely legitimate, and you may even be able to use it for a number of years. Then one year they may actually check into the background. There's no application that was ever really submitted and processed, and you find out you don't really have a passport. So you've got to be very careful there. But what it will do is it will put your assets offshore, and if you have an offshore corporation or offshore trust, say someone's trying to attack it here, well, they're going to have to go to the Isle of Man, and they're going to have an attorney there. They're going to have to go before one of the two judges on the island, and they're going to have to retry their case. So even if they have multi-million dollar judgment against you here, and they go with this nice little piece of paper in their hand, and they trot over there, and they try to present it to the judge and say, here, I want to enforce this, and I know that Joe Blow over here has the XYZ Company Limited, I want you to enforce it, they're going to laugh in their faces, because what they have to do is they have to start over from scratch. And the other thing they have to do is they generally have to forget about punitive damages. You know, none of this $3 billion, $5 billion, even $100,000 punitive damages awards that you see here that juries or judges are giving so often, that are just killing businesses and killing people. And they don't generally recognize, except in very exceptional circumstances, punitive damages over there. So one, they have to retry the case. Two, they don't really get punitive damages. And three, which really should be one, but three, you can tell I'm doing this impromptu, three, they have to find that you're over there in the first place and know what to do. You know, most American attorneys, if they're told it's over there, then they don't know what to do. Maybe after a period of time, they locate a London attorney who's not going to be familiar with the Isle of Man, but maybe knows someone, and then goes over there. And by the time they do it, they're dealing with someone who's already well-known to our outfit, and you know, just the hurdles they have to jump through. It's not impossible, but the obstacle course that they have to go through to get to you is so burdensome that most people would throw their hands up in the air. So it'd have to be a really exceptional circumstance. Now, I have to tell you one caution. If there's fraud involved in a transaction, then it is possible to sometimes pierce through these corporations. But that's going to be true for any jurisdiction. If they can prove fraud, I don't mean just allege it, but if they can prove it in some way, then it is possible for them to pierce it. So, and that has happened at various times. But absent fraud, they can't do it, even if there's a tax situation where they go in and the government's alleging that you owe money. It's incredibly safer over there. And then the beauty of it is, too, that you don't keep all your eggs in one basket. I'd never recommend that. You use the corporation there to then have funds either in Luxembourg, in Austria, which is very secretive. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but there's an account there called a Sparbuch account. The bank doesn't even know who holds it. you're supposed to be an Austrian citizen and to get one, or an Austrian resident. But if you have a Sparbuch account, it's a bearer book account, and you have the book, and whoever holds the book, some of you are nodding and you obviously know of this, they are the owners of the account. So obviously you guard the book very closely. But some people pay their debts with it. And the bank, all the bank knows is there's a number there. It's even more private than a Swiss account, because there the Swiss know who has the account. Here the Austrians don't. Unfortunately, because Austria is joining the EC next year, they have a thing where they're going to start cutting it out. But everyone who has one will be grandfathered in. So there are those accounts that are possible. But the thing to keep in mind, so long as you're a U.S. citizen filing U.S. tax returns, there's the line on your return that requires you to disclose any foreign accounts you have over $10,000. And obviously, what you do is your business. I don't advise clients to violate that, because then you're getting into tax evasion and you can be prosecuted for that. So if they find out, so you need to be very careful. I've just given you a brief overview. There's legal protection by being offshore. There is also ways, but it's very individualistic, so I need to talk to people on a one-on-one basis. But there are ways in which to cut your taxes. We have one client who had after-tax profits of $3 million a year, and by running the business offshore and having an American distributor rather than having the headquarters here, they were able to save $1 million a year in taxes, which accumulates very quickly offshore, and all legal. And just by restructuring the framework of their business, which is an ongoing type of business. Now, there are ways with court system, with the Nevada system, that you could have the Nevada corporation own the offshore company, and that should be explored more fully too. But again, it's very individualized, so it depends upon a person's own circumstance. Now, generally, we're getting business on a one-on-one basis. It's not a big advertisement thing, but obviously you're here because you're interested and well-connected enough to be known through Dharma. So far as I'm concerned, that's a good enough recommendation for me. There are some transactional costs you need to be aware of. If you're setting up a $2,000 account, it's probably not going to be cost-effective for you to do it. It'd have to involve some of money that make it worth your while, or you have an ongoing business as an income stream that you want to protect from taxes. That's basically it. We feel very comfortable with the Isle of Man in particular because of the people there. There are like 70,000 people. Up until just a few years ago, the crime rate was so low, you'd park your car running. Now they at least just park their car and don't leave it running. So it's incredible. The weather's like Ireland, though, and so they have their summer between like July 12th and July 13th. But the people are exceedingly nice. It's about 272 square miles. If you ever make it there, I'd sure recommend it. It's actually a very charming place. It's like being back in the 40s or 50s. In any event, we would provide the business address and the offices that could be used that are offshore, and that's the beauty of it. And we would actually be the people working there, so that it has the reality of being an ongoing offshore business, not just a mailing box that if anyone with a plane ticket price, as the government does, went over and checked, they'd find something there more than just a mailbox and a wall. So it's very similar in that respect to what I understand court is able to offer, except it's just on an offshore variety. So bottom line, what can it do for you is it can remove your assets offshore, especially if you're a political activist in any way, and it can protect you from taxes in various ways, too, that can be explored more. Thank you.
Passport. What advantage is that to have a a Belizean passport. Now, this might be a very ignorant question, obviously.
No, it's really not.
Is this an escape clause you're looking at?
This is just, well, number one, you know, as a U.S. citizen, you're taxed, unlike 99.9% of the countries in the world, you're taxed on your worldwide income. If you're in Mexico making a ton of money, it doesn't matter that the U.S. government isn't providing you an ounce of services, you still have to pay income tax. Most countries, if you're within the level that requires it, of course, most countries are very realistic. Even Canada says if you aren't living here, if you aren't resident in Canada, if you're a Canadian citizen, you're living elsewhere, you aren't availing yourselves of any of our government services, you don't have to pay income tax. It's a roundabout way of addressing your question. The passport has several functions. One is if you give up your citizenship, then you have a passport and a means of getting around. The other reason is that some people say, I am going to pass it on without editorial comment, but what if the borders get sealed and they're looking for Sue Swan, and you have an American passport and can't get out because the computers all say, Sue, stop Sue Swan, search her, you know, do the full strip search, everything, and yet you have another passport. An Irish passport is Martha O'Reilly. Totally legal. It's just your alter ego name. You've done nothing wrong in getting it. Martha O'Reilly would get across the border without a problem normally. So I'm not saying to use it for fraudulent purposes. This is not the purpose of getting a second passport. But if the government ever did become so oppressive that you felt constitutionally right in trying to exercise your constitutional right of free travel, this would do it. But obviously we don't do it for purposes of defrauding any innocent person or anyone who's engaged in business. But it does have advantages. Now, some of these you can buy. You know, Chile is now issuing passports for a low cost. But for those of you who have even an ounce of Irish blood in your background, which covers 90% of the U.S. population, it's
on
real,
St. Patrick's Day.
Especially on St. Patrick's Day. It's relatively easy to get an Irish passport, although it does take some work. It depends upon your special circumstances. Others will be easy. I have the opportunity to get a German or an Irish passport because of my background. I'm sorry.
I was just going to ask if there's any benefit of having a dual citizenship, say, for example, England and Canada.
There is. An English passport is one of the best in the world to have because of the Commonwealth countries and so few visas are required. And believe it or not, unlike the U.S. government, the British consulate actually does act to protect its citizens, its subjects. They'll go out of their way to help people, unlike the American consulate most of the time. But yeah, there's an advantage to having dual citizenship. There are also some disadvantages because you could find yourself subject to two tax regimes. And if you're a young male and sometimes a young female too, subject to being serving in the military. Like if you had a German-American citizenship, you're under 27, you could find yourself subject to German obligatory military service. So, but you know, that's a special case. Anyone else? I thought I saw a hand. Oh no, she's doing the smart thing. She's sewing back there. I thought you were raising your hand.
How are you going to know the price of the passport?
Well, it varies. You know, you can buy a Cape Verdean passport without anyone's help for $15,000. You just pay $15,000. It used to be the same thing for Belize, but then Belize pulled the plug on it. But I hear they're starting over again in terms of doing that. The Irish passport, it really depends upon the person because it depends upon so many factors. If you have, for instance, if your father or mother came over from Ireland, the cost would be not very high because you are so easily documented. If you have a great-grandfather, then it's another thing. If you have very little Irish parentage or you have some other way of doing it, then it's another cost. So it could range without trying, being a typical attorney and trying to avoid the answer, have to fudge a little bit and say somewhere between $2,000 and about $15,000, depending upon your particular circumstance. There are also such things known as camouflage passports. I don't know if you're familiar with those. Those are passports of countries that have gone out of existence, but no one really knows it, especially in third world countries. It's like British Honduras passport or, you know, Suriname or something like that. East Pakistani kind of passport, you know, now it's Bangladesh. And what you do is you get these, and the purpose of them is when you travel in third world countries, you know, you kind of feel, you know, a little shaky about passing up your good passport to the hotel where they require that you deliver it until you leave, because what if you need to leave in a troublesome time? So you give this camouflage passport to them, let them hold it, and you have your real passport in your pocket. Now, I'm not talking about when you cross the border, but once you're in, a lot of times they have requirements that you do this. Those you can get for like $500 real easily. But there are a number of things to do.
Yeah. Do you know anything about the Swiss passport?
I think those are extremely tough to get and very expensive, is my understanding. But realize one basic overriding principle. Most countries will not want to give you citizenship. Most countries will want to give you residency. So it's very easy to get residency. It's very tough, generally, to get citizenship. As a general rule, there are exceptions, obviously. The reason for this is taxation follows residency. Citizenship doesn't necessarily go with taxation. So they're really eager to get your money, but not necessarily to have you be part of the family. In Switzerland, it's especially tough to become a citizen now. But I'll tell you a little secret that I learned, which is, if you want to feel two secrets. There's a little niche of country of Italy called Campione, which you know about, obviously. So maybe I shouldn't say anything. You already know? No, I'm teasing. And Campione is a little enclave of Italy that's separated actually from Italy by a lake. And it's in the southeast corner of Switzerland. It has a Swiss postal code. It's like being in Switzerland because it's surrounded on the four landlocked sides by Switzerland. You really only access it by Switzerland. The Italian tax collectors don't like to go across the water to go there. So the people who live in this like 2 square kilometer area are essentially tax-free residents. They're like in a limbo land. And it's starting to be discovered a little bit about this, but if you have residency there, you're essentially living tax-free. And even though you're nominally Italian taxes, for a practical matter, you aren't subject to it. Now, the other secret that I want to share with you is, if you want to feel like you live in Switzerland but don't want the cost or the really high expense of trying to do the residency or even the citizenship, which is difficult to get, then you live in the French Alps, just on the French border side of the Swiss-French border. And it's just like, I mean, you get the feel of living in Switzerland. You can walk across the border to Switzerland without any problem. You can do shopping in Switzerland, whatever, but you're on the French side. Now, the beauty of getting an Irish passport, by the way, is you can live there without having to worry about the French government. Because of the EC rules, a holder of an Irish passport can live in any other EC country and work there. So you get the Irish passport, it's like an open door to these 300 million people place, and you can travel and reside quite freely. When I visited the Guernsey and Jersey Islands, I saw a lot of Germans living there, actually, which surprised me. And they could live there quite freely and work there if they wanted to. So, any other questions, or anyone want donuts? The rules, a holder of an Irish passport can live in any other EC country and work there. So you get the Irish passport, it's like an open door to these 300 million people place, and you can travel and reside quite freely. When I visited the Guernsey and Jersey Islands, I saw a lot of Germans living there, actually, which surprised me. And they could live there quite freely and work there if they wanted to. So any other questions, or anyone want donuts? Okay, well, I'll be around for a little while if anyone cares to speak with me. And I didn't bring many cards because I didn't think of this being an option. But thank you, Dharma, for letting me speak on the subject. It's very interesting. There are other places go. You'll hear everything from the Cook Islands to Costa Rica to wherever. And I'm not saying to abandon the U.S. necessarily, but they are being abandoned. The U.S. is being abandoned by about 1,000 Americans a month of means. And it will accelerate. I predict it will accelerate. And if there are ever troubles here, as there may very well be, you'll see it become a deluge, I think, as people exit. But those who choose to stay and fight will probably do so safer, or at least with more of a feeling of comfort if they know their family and assets are not here where they're going to be destroyed or otherwise hurt or seized. Okay. Thank you, everyone.
What time is it?
21. Questions?
Well, I really do appreciate. Appreciate his taking time to go through this. I want it integrated into court's program as we move along. Obviously, Scott has been so busy just trying to keep the Eckers out of jail that he's had little time to share on these other projects and things, and we're appreciative of the amount of time that he's been willing to attend. Now, I hope that he doesn't get a very high bill off to EJ for that speech, but on the other hand, this is where it's at, people. You come asking for help. You pray to God to give you help. And then your friends and neighbors will say, well, God wouldn't deal in those things. Then don't ask him for that kind of help. If you really want to know what will heal your body, heal your mind, take care of your money, etc., you're going to have to expect an answer when you pray for it. And you have to recognize it when it shows up. And that's where we get in trouble, is because we try to point out to you, hey, you prayed to God for this answer. Here it is, you know, knock all your teeth out till you notice. Because you are going to have to make the choices. And I now have to face a very big choice. I've kept you over an extra day. Some of you must go. I understand that. And yet I feel my own people clutching out, oh, my family is going to leave me now, let's all cry. Well, no, let's not do that. Let's just plan better next time. And maybe we can combine our business meetings with this kind of meeting and maybe an annual or a semi-annual or a weekly or whatever we need. Catch up. And then we're clear. We're not having a cult meeting. We're having a business meeting. And if you've done your taxes correctly, your business correctly, you can deduct it, or whatever. Or hopefully you will have a corporation doing business and you will not be responsible for it at all, period. So it's 1 o'clock. I know that many need to go. It's lunchtime. I think the nicest thing I could do is just to bid you adieu and a good trip. And thank you for coming. And stay in touch. Please stay in touch.
How about the questions some people had?
What about them?
I think he's trying to.
I don't have to go anywhere. And yet ones don't want to leave either, as long as we're having a meeting.
Splendor, don't you have a big meeting for a special meeting in August sometime?
Do we?
August 95?
August
95. No, because I think they'll be filming and they won't let me have a meeting. They'll probably want to have a gathering of some kind.
Yes.
Yes, please.
Oh, well, I have a question, Commander. I think you can hear me. Your microphone. No,
yeah,
you
I hear
it. On tape, though.
My question is, granted, we all know and have been taught by you that your craft aren't in front of many of the stars up there. And then you mentioned something this morning about this illusionary world, and I'm really confused. I really would like to know if it's possible, with our limited perception, if you could tell us what you really did with Venus. I recognized the fact that it was different and it was moved, but I thought it was my imagination.
How much did she pay you to ask that question?
She didn't. I had it on mine yesterday, so she didn't, honestly. That's my question.
We didn't do anything with Venus. I will usually orbit with a craft that is toward evening my location. From the time you become visible, I am between you and Venus. I didn't have to move Venus. I just had to move me and block your view of Venus.
Big Dipper too?
Yeah.
Well, we're not going to get into the constellations. You've got a big cosmos out there. But you're looking in the right direction. And when we, quote, go down, we immediately move then our location back into the east.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
Explain about souls, how they arrive and how they exit, and what occurs with souls between lives.
Listen to her. She's the one I was adjourning the meeting for because they need to be on their way. And she asked me a month-long question. Well, so be it. I guess we're in business. Are there any more donuts?
Also, to make it more complicated, can a soul choose the person it's going to enter between the incarnations? And can it determine before re-entry what kind of person that will be?
Yes. That is the
question, so that they can put on tape, because
I'm taking care of it. Well, it was a lawyer's question, and there were 19 parts. What she basically is wanting to know is what happens to the soul. How does it make entry? How does it make exit? What does it do in the meanwhile? And thus and so. So that basically is a question. And are there choices? And the answer is absolutely. And the choices will be made of a soul in an astral or etheric body, if you will, or non-body, if you prefer. There are levels and dimensions beyond the physical plane, which are semi-physical, somewhat coalesced. There are planes where you can go where, through choice, there is coalescence or manifestation of body. What happens is at the birthing of a new life or a new soul, if you will, what you would call a baby soul or a young beginning soul, a created being, of which you don't need very many.